Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service, where we report the world, however difficult the issue, however hard to reach. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
I'm Katia Adler from the Global Story podcast. Today we're looking at Sudan and the brutal conflict raging there. We hear from some of the millions of civilians brutalised and displaced. It's been dubbed the Forgotten War. But is it more ignored than forgotten by the international community? And if so, why? Find us wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, I'm Greer Jackson, and welcome to this bonus episode of the documentary from the BBC World Service. I'm the presenter of the Climate Question podcast. Every week, we scour the world to see how climate change is affecting our planet and what we can do about it. You can subscribe to The Climate Question wherever you get your podcasts. And to give you a flavour of what we do, you're about to hear the BBC's Justin Rowlatt reporting for us from Somalia.
We are entering the fifth consecutive failed rainy season in the Horn of Africa.
It's decimated livestock, crops, and have forced people to flee their homes in search of help.
Climate change is taking a terrible toll across the world, bringing droughts and floods.
It's the biggest flood we've seen in living memory.
We're on the brink of an unprecedented humanitarian catastrophe.
No city can take that amount of rain.
Time is of essence. We need to act now.
But it's doing something else as well, acting as a kind of chaos multiplier, making existing conflicts even more acute.
It's a disaster. I don't know how to express, you know, how to explain, but it seems like it's chaos.
I've been to Somalia, one of the most dangerous countries in the world, to see how climate change is helping drive the violence here. When drought hits, finding food for your animals can become a matter of life and death.
The herders who lead their animals into the farm stay back when they see my gun. They get scared of you.
And climate change has also helped force millions of Somalis into ragged refugee camps, where often the only way to earn money is as a fighter with a local militia.
My husband died fighting. May God rest his soul.
But Somalia is beginning to help itself, investing in wind and solar to power its cities.
Our ambition is to reach 80%.
Starting new businesses.
I buy food from the shop opposite. I cook it and I keep the profit.
There is hope.
We are already rising. We have the tenacity and the grit to withstand every shock and every adversity that a society could face.
I'm the BBC's climate editor, Justin Rowlatt, and this week on The Climate Question, I'm asking, can Somalia escape the vicious cycle of climate and conflict? It isn't easy travelling in Somalia. We're in a three-car convoy and we've got armed guards with us. The Red Cross has been working here for years. They know the risks better than anyone, and Somalia is the only country in the world where their staff have armed guards as standard. We are headed out into the wild scrub that covers much of the country to meet a community who are right on the front line of climate change. Somalia is still overwhelmingly an agricultural society. Around two-thirds of the people here depend on farming. About half the population is reckoned to earn their living by herding animals.
When I had a big herd, I'd go very far. You go to a place where you know the animals will have pasture and will flourish. That's how we herd them.
Sheikh Don Ismail used to be a nomadic camel herder. The herders sing traditional songs to soothe the animals as they scoop water into the camel's trough. Camel herding is an ancient tradition in Somalia. The climate has always been harsh and variable here, but for thousands of years, people have been able to eke out a living by moving from one pasture to the next in these dry lands, often travelling hundreds of kilometres.
I'd live with my people and animals. I'd go to places far away.
The herding lifestyle depends on regular patterns of rain. But climate change means those patterns seem to be breaking down.
Things have changed. Before, it was good and prosperous for rural people. But more recently, droughts have become more frequent.
The rains in Somalia usually come twice a year, but between 2020 and 2022, they failed five times in a row. It caused Somalia's worst drought for 40 years and pushed the country to the edge of famine. For Sheikh Don, it was a disaster.
When drought hit the whole country, there was nowhere to go to. The well became dry and there was no pasture. When drought happens, the animals are affected. Then they start to die after a while.
Scientists estimate warmer temperatures thanks to human-caused climate change made the recent drought in Somalia 100 times more likely. Unlike most herders, Sheikh Don had a fallback, a small farm, but it wasn't enough.
We plant grain, maize, grass. I cut it and feed it to the animals. But the wells became shallow. I couldn't afford to feed the animals anymore.
Sheikh Don says tensions have risen in the community. When drought hits, herders compete to get the best pastures, to get access to a waterhole or a borehole, and sometimes they even stray onto his farm, he says. He tells me it is why he has to have a gun.
There's no respect if you don't have a gun. The herders who lead their animals into the farm stay back when they see my gun. They get scared of you. This is why I took the gun.
This conflict between settled farmers and nomadic herders is a familiar pattern, not just in Somalia, but across the whole of North Africa, says Cyril Jarena, the head of the International Red Cross operation in Somalia.
Access to borehole, access to pasture land are more and more difficult to find or to get. And so population living in similar areas might end up fighting, competing for those resources. And sometimes it goes to people shooting at each other.
The camel herders say usually everyone comes to an understanding about access to pasture or waterholes. But one herder, Mohammed Hersi Ali, admits this isn't always the case.
There are confrontations sometimes. Someone disputes use of pasture, water, like in the wells, or even the land, saying they own it. That is what causes confrontation. Farmers tell us to keep our camels away from them. They say, keep your camel off our farm. And the camels want what is in the farm. So it's likely there will be confrontation.
Somalia is a clan-based society, and there's been confrontation and conflict throughout its history.
The Somalis are well-trained and adept in warfare, best suited to this type of terrain. To sit a camel and still look like a soldier is an achievement.
During the colonial era, the clan territories were merged into two colonies, Italian Somalia and British Somaliland. At independence in 1960, they were merged to form the Independent Somali Republic. A brutal dictator, Siad Barre, took power after a coup. His repressive rule suppressed clan conflicts, but the arbitrary colonial boundaries led to skirmishes with neighbouring countries, including a full-blown war with Ethiopia. Barre was overthrown in 1991, and the country collapsed into a civil war and jihadist insurgency.
That's a helicopter gunship overhead, firing into the general direction of General ID's compound.
Western attempts to hold back the chaos ended in disaster and humiliation when two US Black Hawk helicopters were shot down over Mogadishu. After the battle that followed, two dead American soldiers were dragged through the streets, leading to a public outcry in the US. In 1995, Western troops pulled out, and they have not returned. Decades of anarchy have followed. This has devastated the country's agricultural system, destroyed its infrastructure, and stunted its economy. And it has also created a sickening circularity. Climate change is making resources even more scarce, heightening the conflict, while at the same time the conflict leaves the country more vulnerable to climate shocks. In Somalia, climate change isn't just increasing droughts, it's also causing more frequent and more severe flooding, a weather and climate double whammy. We have come way down to the south of Somalia. This place, Kismayo, is a port town. It has been bitterly fought over. At one stage, Islamist militants from the lethal Al-Qaeda affiliate Al-Shabaab overran the place. It was retaken by the Somali army about a decade ago, but the threat hasn't gone away. Al-Shabaab forces still surround the town. The front line is just 60 kilometres away. That means the town is like an island, cut off from the rest of the country, but not from the weather. The year after the drought, Somalia was hit with terrible floods caused by rains reckoned to have been made twice as intense because of human-caused global warming. The floods killed hundreds of people and displaced more than a million more. It wrecked farms and killed yet more animals, as well as destroying key infrastructure. And because the country is divided by conflict, it is even harder to deal with the consequences of these overlapping climate shocks. Every day, a steady stream of mothers bring in their sick babies and children to this hospital in Kismayo. Many have risked crossing the front line to get here. All of them are hungry. The UN says 1.7 million children under the age of five are on the pathway to famine. The combination of conflict and climate shocks mean aid agencies are stretched to the limit, says the ICRC.
Even if we are not specialized in climate change, it's something we have to take into account, because for the last 3 years, there were natural catastrophes that are directly linked to the climate change that basically prevented us from doing our job fully the way we wanted to do it, and that also affected very badly the population.
Salma Abdul Qadir lives in an area controlled by Al-Shabaab. She was 9 months pregnant when her baby son fell ill. She had to travel for 2 days to get to this hospital.
It was difficult. We got rained on and there was mud. We suffered. We walked and spent 2 nights on the road. There was no one else to carry my sick child, just me. I came here with great difficulty. We don't have anything. The litter we had, the farm, was washed away. We don't have anything.
It can seem hopeless, but Somalis are strong people and, like the babies in this hospital, they can recover.
When we brought the little boy here, he looked like an inflated sack. You couldn't recognize him. You couldn't even see his eyes properly. Now, praise be to God, his eyes are better and he's getting back to normal.
You're listening to The Climate Question from the BBC World Service.
I'm Katya Adler from the Global Story podcast. Today we're looking at Sudan and the brutal conflict raging there. We hear from some of the millions of civilians brutalized and displaced. It's been dubbed the Forgotten War. But is it more ignored than forgotten by the international community? And if so, why? Find us wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm the BBC's climate editor, Justin Rowlatt, and this week I'm in Somalia to look at how climate change is intensifying conflict. It's important to point out that increasingly intense droughts and rainy seasons aren't just an issue for Somalia. They are being experienced across the whole of the Sahel, the region between the Sahara Desert in the north and the tropics in the south. The increase in temperatures here is projected to be 1.5 times higher than the global average, says the UN. As in Somalia, the entire region relies on climate-sensitive agriculture. And, just as in Somalia, climate change is driving confrontation with a devastating effect on its people. Abdi Hakim Ayente advises the Somali Prime Minister on climate change.
So climate change, I would rate number one over every other challenge that we have in Somalia.
Hold on, including the conflict that has raged for more than 30 years.
Including the conflict, yes, because of the conflict is a way you can silence and end the conflict, but you cannot silence or put an end to a science-based problem, which is a natural disaster that is happening and claiming thousands of lives. So I would put climate over every challenge that we have in the country.
This combination of climate change and conflict has also forced Somalis into refugee camps. Almost 4 million people are classed as internally displaced. That is a fifth of the population and a number that has quadrupled in a decade. The vast refugee camp at Garraway is made up of makeshift huts made with all sorts of discarded materials. Fabric is stretched over wooden frames. There are homes made of old plastic containers and plastic sheets. Some people have even opened out tin cans into strips of metal and used those to create walls. The people here get little international help, if any at all. They have to pay rent to stay here, as well as for their food and water. Here I meet Halima. Her family lost everything because of drought.
We used to be rural people. We had camels and goats. The droughts used to be short. We would lose some animals. Some would remain. But more recently, the droughts have been worse. They have affected everyone and every animal.
Halima misses the herding life.
Since we came here, every day is getting harder and harder. Every day, the difficulties grow. There are no schools. We don't get any help from anyone. We cooked a meal this morning. That means we won't eat again for the rest of the day.
With virtually no work in town, many families have to get by on occasional handouts from family and clan members. And when you spend a bit of time in the Garraway camp, you notice something really interesting. There are very few men here. Most of them leave to find work elsewhere, says Halima. Her husband and 4 of her 5 sons have joined a local militia.
They joined the troops because they are rural people and have no education or skills to use in the town. They had to put on uniforms and pick up weapons. It's desperation that made them join. When you wake up again and again in your sleep, and when you have nothing to do, you will try anything. When you go without food long enough and your children are looking at you, you will do anything. So, desperation made them join.
Halima's family's story is repeated across the country. The hundreds of thousands of people displaced by climate change create a huge pool of potential recruits for clan militia, regional armies, or the jihadist insurgencies. It helps drive the conflict and it perpetuates Somalia's cycle of misery. Kafio's family lost all their animals to drought and, like Halima, her husband felt he had no choice but to join a local militia. He was killed in a gun battle in a local town just over a year ago, leaving her looking after their 7 children on her own.
I knew when he joined the militia that he might die or he might survive. When he died, he left me and the children on our own. We don't get support from anywhere, and our breadwinner is dead. Some nights we eat, some we don't.
As Somalia deals with conflict, extreme weather, and a refugee crisis, the world has other priorities. Other wars in Gaza, the Middle East, and Ukraine, for example, seem more urgent and more worrying. That's where the world's attention and its cash is focused.
Time is of the essence. These people are starving. Children are dying.
The UN has calculated Somalia needs at least $1.6 billion this year, and that is just to meet the basic humanitarian needs of the country. But so far, only about $600 million has been pledged. Yet Somalia bears virtually no responsibility for the changes in the global climate that are wreaking such damage on the country. The entire country has emitted roughly as much carbon dioxide since the 1950s as the American economy has in the last 3 days. It means Somalia has to do its best to tackle the cascading impacts of climate and conflict by itself. In Garowe, Somalis are starting to do just that. The local power station has been making some dramatic new investments in renewables.
Well, there's no shortage of wind in this part of Somalia, and they're already using that to generate power and the region's abundant solar resources as well. In fact, 2/3 of this city's power is currently being generated by wind and by solar.
The average across the year is much lower, about 10% of total power. But that is changing fast, says the boss of the plant, Abdi Razak Mohammed.
Our ambition is to reach 80% to produce from renewable energy.
He says his company hasn't received any grants or aid from abroad. It borrowed the $2 million it cost to install the solar panels from the company that made them.
And how quickly can you pay that back?
It's 2 years payback loan repayment.
And you can pay that back with the revenues from selling the electricity in 2 years?
Yeah.
That's quick.
Yes.
That is quick.
Abdi Razak says renewables are just much better value than his diesel generators. Each of these beasts cost $300,000 to buy, plus $20,000 a day in diesel, and they only last about 5 years. His solar panels cost nothing to run, and he says will last 20 years.
It's cheaper because it has a good lifetime, easy to install, easy to maintain. And now is very cheap, day after day.
The plan is to build a much bigger plant, 20 times as much solar and 30 times the wind power. It'll cost $17 million and will be backed up with batteries along with a few diesel generators. The cash will be from private investors in a share sale. And here's the thing, the costs of producing power will be so much lower, Mohammed expects to be able to cut prices for consumers in half. But there is a problem. There are virtually no renewable energy engineers in Somalia, let alone in this small city. Mohammed's answer, his company is training them up itself. Young people apply for the 2-year course he runs. If they get in, the training is completely free. Abdi Nasir Alem Hassan believes his training could help transform his life and his country.
I must work as hard, give a lot of effort so that it can reach the farthest point. I see the future is bright for me, even in Somalia, because we have a new generation who are waking up, having spirits, and want to learn something for their country.
Lower electricity prices will be good news for everyone and could have an added environmental bonus too. As we drive around Kismayo in the south of Somalia, we see evidence of the trade in charcoal virtually everywhere. It is made from trees and bushes cut from the savanna ecosystem. It's illegal to make it in most of the country, but it is still widely used for cooking and is also exported to neighbouring Kenya and to the Gulf states. I saw piles and piles of it on the streets. The fumes from charcoal stoves can also damage health. The hope is cheaper and more reliable electricity will reduce charcoal demand. And when you look around, there are hopeful signs and stories everywhere. On the edge of the refugee camp, men played dominoes outside a caf. The business is the brainchild of Amina Osman Mohammed. Her family lost their animals to drought. Her husband is ill and she cares for 11 children, including her widowed daughter's kids. But Amina is determined to improve her family's situation. I want things to get better, Amina tells me. It's up to Allah if I get lucky.
Allah makes your luck, but you also make luck too.
Despite the changing climate, the conflict, the poverty of the camp she lives in, Amina believes in a better future for her family and her country. And she is not alone. Abdi Hakim Ayinte, the Prime Minister's climate advisor, is also an optimist.
Somalia is a story of a potential, of a promise, and I don't subscribe to the notion that Somalia is unfixable. I think it's fixable, and it's showing a significant progress on pretty much every front that you can look into.
But a series of recent bomb attacks in Somalia shows how much still needs to be done.
An attacker detonated a car full of explosives outside a crowded cafe. The attack happened on...
And with climate change turbocharging the conflict, the country will need international support as it tries to bring peace and also to make the investments in long-term development that can help build resilience to climate change. It will take time, but as I've discovered on my journey here, Somalis are resourceful, entrepreneurial people, and they have not lost hope. You can watch a video version of this story on the BBC's website or on iPlayer. Just search for Somalia from Crisis to Renewal. It was filmed in Somalia by Stuart Phillips. Audio production back in the UK was by Miho Tanaka, Sarah Hegarty and Simon Watts. The sound mix was by Tom Brignall and David Crackles. I'm the BBC's climate editor, Justin Rowlatt. Thank you for listening to this edition of The Climate Question. Greya and her team will be back in the next episode.
I'm Katia Adler from the Global Story podcast. Today we're looking at Sudan and the brutal conflict raging there. We hear from some of the millions of civilians brutalized and displaced. It's been dubbed the Forgotten War. But is it more ignored than forgotten by the international community? And if so, why? Find us wherever you get your podcasts.